not last, it's not surpassed.
It used to be a newspaper.
The Butt Podcast, not outclassed, wonders en masse.
Get it unmatched, everyone, up to the end of the game.
The Butt Podcast, there's the ins, there's the outs, there's the shake it all about. There's the old and the new, the wondrous legends on interview. First not last, it's not surpassed.
It used to be a newspaper.
The Butt Podcast, not outclassed, wondrous en masse.
Get it unmatched, everyone, up to the end of the game.
The Butt Podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Buff Extra, a new series of interviews with the players, names and faces who made Bolton Wanderers great. Over the next few weeks, I'll be catching up with some of the Burnham Park and Reebok Stadium favourites to see what they're up to now and what they remember about their time at Bolton. Don't forget, every single Friday you can catch up with me, Mark Isles, and my co-host Henry Hewitt to discuss all the week's latest events at Wanderers in our regular Buff podcast. But for now, on with the show. This week's guest on The Buff is a player who always conjures the same sort of response from those who watched him tear down the wing at Burnham Park, and by heck, this boy could move. One of the quickest players ever to wear the white shirt, he played 163 times for Wanderers, scored 15 goals, helped the team out of Division 4 and lifted the Sherpa Van Trophy at Wembley. Ladies and gentlemen, Stuart Storer. Stuart, welcome back to The Buff. It's almost as if you've never been away.
Thank you very much. I wish I could move like I did back then now, but obviously we're all a bit older and wiser and we can't, can we?
Well, I have to explain to the viewers that Stuart has obliged me. I managed to mess up the recording, so we were about 5-10 minutes into talking about his time at Bolton and then realised that it wasn't recording properly. So Stuart has been an absolute star and we've restarted. So it's always better second time around, Stuart. Let's be
Hopefully,
honest.
Yeah.
let's belt straight in, because like I just said there in the intro, lads who watch you tear up and down that touchline, they always say the same thing to me. Whenever we dig out the old photos and do the nostalgic things, is that guy could move. And how fast were you? I mean, were you a sprinter at the time?
I think I was just born blessed with speed. I used to play football as a kid from three and do every sport going. And I just think it built up my thighs and my glutes, and I was rapid. I wasn't sort of technically gifted, but obviously my speed got me through quite a few things. Also, I was sort of clocked at 10.9 when I was running, as in on a track with spikes and things like that. So it was something I was blessed with, really.
10.9, that's quick. That is really quick. And something I didn't mention when we were talking about it earlier is I was looking at some videos about you racing. I mean, I can't get my head around the idea of this happening nowadays, but they actually got you all, the fastest player from each club, to race against each other. How did that come about? I mean, that bamboozles me. Can you imagine that happening now?
Yeah, I just think it was a bit of a sideshow for the Rumbelows Cup final.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and generally, it just sent out a memo. It's probably one of them things like, who's got the hardest shot? Do you know what I mean? It's, and they just sort of thought, let's give this a go. So, yeah, we had sort of an in-club race amongst us all, which obviously I won. And all the other teams had their winners of their respective clubs, and then we had to go to a regional final, then a semi-final, then a final at Rumbelows Cup final. I got through to the final, but 5 days before the final at Wembley I broke my ankle.
Bloody hell.
So I couldn't, well, I could have ran in it, but I don't think I'd have done much cop, really.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. I was watching some of the old video, and do you know, there's some names in there I would never have expected. I think Paul Warhurst was in there as a real youngster. I didn't realise he was quick when he was younger, but Keith Curl was in the final, wasn't he?
Keith Curl beat me in the regionals.
Right.
I think he was at Man City at the time.
But this at the time, he's just gone for 2 odd million quid. He's the most expensive defender in England, and yet he's running up and down the touchline in the Rumblows Cup final.
Madness, isn't it?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Who else came anywhere near you in the Bolton trial, by the way? Was there anybody that ran you close?
I still think they're trying to finish, mate, to be honest with you.
I doubt Trevor Morgan got anywhere near it. I know that.
He might have rolled off the start line, Trevor.
But, I mean, it still amazes me that they'd even bother. But I can't believe you broke your ankle on the way into it.
Yeah.
Did you do it playing or training?
Believe it or not, I was playing at Burnden Park against Rotherham for the second team. And I went in for a tackle and just got up, couldn't really walk on it. And I didn't really think much of it. And a ball's come to me on the edge of the box. And I thought, crikey, I'm going to have to kick this hard. And I didn't want to and I ended up chipping the ball. And that's the hardest I could kick it. And I deceived the keeper. Ball's gone in the back of the net. And then I've had to walk off because I was in so much pain.
Scoring with a broken ankle.
Yeah, but the thing was, like I said, if I'd tried to strike it, I think my foot would have flown over the Normie superstore. it was that end as well, yeah.
Good grief, yeah, I mean, absolutely. famous end in football at that point in time. But
I feel
like a bit of a cheat because we've already discussed this a little bit in the podcast we didn't record. But you had a really interesting journey to Bolton because in 1987 you were playing at Everton, who at that point in time were the biggest. Well, they were the best club in England because they were going for the title. One of the best clubs in Europe. I mean, you know, Toffees fans will argue until the cows come home that if it hadn't been for the European ban, they'd have been dominating Europe at that point in time. Yeah. So you, from being a young lad at Birmingham, suddenly found yourself at Howard Kendall's Everton, the School of Science at that point in time. How did that come about?
Yeah, strange one, really. I just got a phone call one day off John Bond, who was the Blues manager, and just said, Everton want to sign you. I played about 15 games for Birmingham and done all right, I thought. So I just thought, this is going to be a big wind-up. So, I was thinking, what's going to happen here? Everton has to meet me at Junction 7 on the M6 at a hotel. So I'm driving up thinking someone's going to be there and jump out at me and this isn't going to be right. But when I turned up, Al Kendall was at the reception to meet me with his entourage, and we sat down and we didn't have any agents in them days, and we thrashed out a deal which obviously took me to Goodison.
That's incredible, incredible. Because I mean, having not been a first team regular, you know, not really been an established player to get drafted into that midfield. I mean, I'm trying to think who would have been, who's up against you on the right hand side of that? Is it a Mark Ward or is that a bit
Trevor Stephen? It's
Trevor Stephen, of course,
Trevor Stephen, yeah. So and they had a squad there that what a great squad, and trying to break through into that team was very difficult in the days of the one sub.
Yeah.
So, I travelled a few times with the first teams, went down to Tottenham, Arsenal, Villa and Norwich as like the 13th man, if anyone was to get sick or injured, in the warm-ups. But never got the opportunity to kick a ball for the first team in anger, really, for Everton. And so that was sort of, I was there for about 12, 18 months, something like that, before moving on.
You went out to Wigan briefly, didn't you? And then on to Bolton. So was it a case of just getting that bug of a bit of regular football, and you needed to move on at that point in time?
Yeah, because obviously I'd played at Birmingham in front of decent crowds. It was almost like I needed that fixed, to play first team football. So I had 3 months at Wigan, which went well. Went back to Everton, played a few more reserve matches before Phil Neal came and watched me one game at Goodison, and I seem to remember I played well, scored a couple, and never really looked back from there, really.
It was a strange time for Bolton because, you've dropped into Division 4, and you know, the 1980s in general, I think, was a bad time for Bolton, because they'd gone from being a kind of rock and roll team under Ian Greaves at the end of the 70s with your Frank Worthingtons and your Paul Jones and your Sam Allardyces, and then, you know, cash had become very scarce. It was a club on the decline at that point in time, and obviously hit rock bottom with the Division 4 relegation. Did it feel like that to you coming in, or did youth kind of take you through that, and it was like, yes, I'm playing regularly now, and it, you know, it felt like a club that could come back up again?
Well, I knew Bolton was a big football club, and still is a big football club, of course. But when I went there, I could see the quality of the players, and they had the momentum. There was the right end of the table, a bit like sort of the Wanderers squad today. They've got the momentum, and they look like they're bouncing back and had a good win Saturday. But generally, I could see the players there. I could see the team spirit. And I just thought, yeah, I want to be part of that. I had the 3-month loan period to get me used to it as well. And I could see that they were going to go in the right direction. And again, it was a sort of no-brainer for me. A big football club, probably in the wrong area, definitely in the wrong area of the football pyramid, but with the potential to bounce back up.
It's still, when we agreed to do the podcast, I'm thinking, right, well, I what I definitely know is that you came on as a sub in the Sherpa Van Trophy final, and I thought it was going to be very much about that kind of Division 3 Phil Neal team that missed out, so went so near to promotion. But actually what I didn't realise is that you actually played a fair number of games in Division 4. And then you would have been involved in the squad as right at the very end for that Wrexham game as well. I mean, what?
Yeah.
I'm surprised anybody's finished celebrating that one, because that was quite some occasion.
It was. That was sort of my first major achievement in professional football, was getting that promotion. And I just remember going to the ground on the day and going through Wrexham and all the pubs. It was a sunny day, the beer gardens were full, and it was just Bolton, blue and white everywhere, and it was a great atmosphere. Just they could see the coach coming, they'd get up on their feet, they'd be waving their flags, and it was a really good atmosphere. And then to go and finish it off at Wrexham and get promotion was an unbelievable feeling, and it was great to be part of that.
You had some lads in that dressing room as well that I can imagine could celebrate a promotion.
I still think some of them might be getting over the hangover from that.
Dead right, yeah. It was a tremendous time. I mean, that certainly that Robbie Savage goal will go down in the history books for Bolton, because it was the time that, you know, things were finally back up, and there was a different feel about the club from there on in. And you know, yes, you kind of hammered your head against a brick wall in Division 3 under Phil Neal, didn't quite make it with the playoffs, but you could feel at least the club were building towards something at that point. Yeah,
definitely. You know, within that sort of second year after the Sherpa Van, there was a bit of a clean sweep with some of the old players going, like your Trevor Morgans, your John Thomas, your David Fellgates, Dean Crombies, that had served the club really, really well. And they brought in new players like Andy Walker, John McGinley, you know, and some of the stalwarts that were there, like Steve Thompson, Julian Darby. You know, we were developing the squad with a bit more youth, which seemed to work to take us to the top end of the old third division.
I mean, that Sherpa Van Trophy's final, it just gave Bolton fans another great day out. And it really was. And it's one of the good games that is actually preserved on YouTube as well. Is it something you watch back at all with fondness?
I'm very much always thinking sort of forward rather than backwards. It sounds strange. Sometimes, like, I've moved house recently and I was looking through some old programmes, and it's very rarely I look backwards, but it did bring back some really good memories of all the clubs I've been at, but especially Bolton, because that's where I had my most success with the promotions, with the Sherpa Van as well. I spent 4.5-5 years there of my life, and loved it up there, and it was fantastic.
What was it about Bolton? I very rarely hear anybody not enjoy the time at Bolton, but what was particular about Bolton to you?
Just so friendly. Everybody had talked to you, and they're just such friendly people, and got on with a lot of people. Still got good friends up in Bolton as well, you know, which I come and visit quite regularly. But they're just so friendly, and there was a togetherness about the whole place. And again, winning games helps that togetherness. The whole place, the whole community had a really good feel about it.
You went on a 20-game unbeaten run going into that final as well. It was a really red-hot streak. There was no way you were going to...
23 games. 23 games. Yeah, that's right, games unbeaten. I remember
incredible.
That, yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, and the night we got to the final, we played Blackpool away. Was it Bury?
No, it was Blackpool. It was Blackpool.
Blackpool. Yeah, and I sort of remember going back to Bolton, and I don't know if you remember, there's a pub called the Crown and Cushion. You had to go up some steep stairs to the top of the Crown and Cushion.
Well. Yeah.
And they had a big stage there, and a few of us went back there, and we had the karaoke on, so we had We Are the Champions on there, and we got up there singing, and they all joined in, didn't they? It was a great atmosphere.
Fantastic.
So yeah, that was a fond memory. Not that I could sing very well, but it was a good memory.
I can imagine there was a few who quite fancied themselves. A certain Phil Brown, if you get a microphone anywhere near him, he certainly fancies it.
Well, he weren't shy when Hull stayed up, was he? Let's put it like that. He rang out that tune like he meant it, didn't he?
absolutely. I mean, it was a team full of characters, really, wasn't it? And
yeah,
there were some very, very good players. The team that won that game against Torquay, on a pitch that size, you know, you need athletes, don't you? And they certainly had them on the day.
Yeah. Obviously, like you said, the confidence that we went into that game, you know, there's probably only going to be one winner, really, 20 games unbeaten. We was thinking it was going to be Wolves in the final, but Torquay turned over Wolves, and that was a surprise as well. So without being disrespectful, it probably made our job a little bit easier as well.
Did you get to meet Elton John?
Yeah, believe it or not, you mentioned about... do I ever look back? And it was about 6 months ago, I was watching something on telly and they were shaking hands. And I thought, who was the person? Was it the Queen? Have I met the Queen? Or, do you know, on the day of the Sherpa van, they must have had sort of a celebrity or someone. And I looked it up and it was Elton John.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Elton John remembers meeting me more than I do him, actually.
Nobody's going to forget that moustache, by the way, Stuart. Between you and Barry Cowdrell, you summed up an era there, mate.
We look like Chuckle Brothers, don't we? I think if I'd have gone any quicker, I might have blown off my moustache anyway.
It was clinging on for grim death, wasn't it? Let's face it. Yeah. But you were the sub on there. I can't remember. There's one or two. There must have been two subs for that one. But did it tend to be a goalkeeper and an outfield player at that point in time?
I can't remember, to be quite honest with you. I do remember on the run up, Jeff Chandler was playing quite regularly, and I played the last 5 or 6 games, and I got 4 goals. And I thought to myself, I've got a right good chance of playing here. But Phil Neal sort of stuck with Jeff, which was probably one of the most upsetting times in football, because obviously as a young lad and trying so hard and doing so well, to be let down like that, it drove me on, actually, to be honest with you. It drove me to be bigger, better, stronger. But at the time, I was obviously quite disappointed. But, you know, at the end of the day, it wasn't about me. It was about Bolton Wanderers winning the Cup. And they won the Cup, and what a great day out we had, and we all enjoyed it, didn't we?
Oh, the weird thing is we had Jeff on a few weeks back. He was telling a very different story. He was well happy.
So, really? I wonder why.
Yeah, there's two sides to every story. It's just strange, isn't it? But, I mean, fair play. You got on towards the end there, and I think when you first touched yourself, Trevor Morgan for a goal, didn't you?
Yeah, I think it was Steve Thompson had put up a ball over it, and I just thought, I've got to go for this. I didn't really believe I was going to get there, and I got there just on the line, managed to pull it back, and Big Trev probably put it away from about the penalty spot, didn't he? You know, for Trev, he's always sort of thanked me for that. So yeah. It's always nice to call on him when I need something.
And he got the somersault celebration in as well. I think the tremors are still going around North London way, I think.
Yeah, the sumo somersault, I think they called it, didn't they?
was it as hot as it looked, by the way? Because people tell me it was absolutely roasting that day.
Yeah, funny enough, I can't really remember. It must have been. It's me coming on, I must have had fresh legs in them first few runs and probably made me look a bit quicker than I actually was, to be fair.
Well, Brownie says he's still got a suntan from that day anyway, so he's never recovered. He's never recovered.
I just keep thinking he's varnishing his fence every week, the way he looks.
The Ron Seal look, yeah, dead right.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. I mean, the thing is, you got up into Division 3 eventually, and the frustrating thing, I think, probably for your era of players, that you didn't kind of build on that to get past that final hurdle, because you had playoff semi-final defeat, you lost in a final. That must be a regret for you, I suppose, from your time with Bolton.
Well, again, it sort of put one wrong right, as it was for me, that I played in that final at Wembley. So I made a starting at Wembley. So again, the disappointment of the first Wembley substitutes appearance was put right, because I was working towards doing it again. So we had a good team there, and we were knocking on the door regularly, but we just couldn't quite open the door. Well, we did eventually, but you know, it took a while to do.
I mean, I don't know whether or not Tony Phillips Kirk and Dave Dreeves stay in touch with you and thank you for the service, but you know, the Bros brothers profited quite well from the wings. They were, you know, they were the darlings of the terraces, weren't they, at the time? They scored plenty of goals for Bolton.
Yeah, two great lads, and you know, when I do see them, we have a good laugh. It's not very often, but I wouldn't say we keep in contact, but you know, you do come up across people now and then, and it's like you've never been away, because they've been good friends. But you know, Dave Reeves was a workaholic, ran around busy as anything. Phyllis Kirk just used to put the ball in the back of the net, so they complemented each other really well. And it was a good period to be playing at a football club, and we scored a lot of goals. Well, I didn't personally, but them two did. And Tomo got a few, Julian Darby got a few from midfield, and we all seemed to chip in. It was a very good side, yeah.
Julian could play anywhere as well. I mean, I think there's only goalkeeper he didn't actually fill in as a Bolton player, but he was one of those. He's always an unsung hero, because you do get this. You get players at every club, particularly I think homegrown players, that they don't get the
Mark Noble sort of.
Yeah, exactly.
That, don't he?
Exactly. And the fans, they appreciate him when they're coming through, but eventually you almost get taken for granted a little bit.
Yeah. I just remember the Sherpa Van commentary was a Ding Dong Derby. That stuck. That was his nickname from there on in. I don't think he appreciated the commentary, to be fair.
Dave Higson was the...
That's him. Brilliant.
Amazing fella. No longer with us, God bless him, but he's... I mean, he put Bolton commentary on the map at that point in time. But
certainly did.
It was such an innocent age as well. You look back at some of those things, like the commentary, the Higson commentaries, and the interviews he used to do before the game and such like. And it's just amazing that football's changed in such... It's a shame in many ways, because you felt a lot closer to the players who were, you know, you know, they were having a pint in the pub after a game, or they were catching a bus home and that lot. It seems like there's a detachment now.
It's got so professional, so big, and so quickly, hasn't it? I sort of remember first joining Bolton. They had a big, do you know, one of them great big bottles of whiskey in the corner.
Yeah.
And before we went out, because it used to get a bit chilly up north, didn't it?
Just a bit, yeah. Still does.
You had a finger of, you know, of whiskey. Everyone had to go around and have a drink, and I hated whiskey. So I just put it up against my lips as if I was drinking it, and just imagine that today. You know what I mean? Well, you're going to have a toss of whiskey before you go out because it's a bit nippy out there.
I doubt it's in Pep Guardiola's playbook, is it? Let's face it. Oh dear.
You
needed it in those days, because it still gets brassic up here, by the way. But
I know.
Nowhere more when the mist started rolling at Burnham Park. It could be a very cold place indeed.
Yeah.
It was a special place, though, Burnham, because it always, I mean, I was only a wee nipper at the time you were coming through, but it was kind of, it always seemed massive. It always seemed such a cavernous ground when, you know, the fact that there weren't massive crowds there most days when Bolton were playing, but it just seemed like such an echoing, booming noise.
Yeah, it was right next to, was it the A666?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, it was.
And we had a little AstroTurf behind where we used to train, and the pitch was raised up a little bit. The amount of laps I must have done around that pitch would be unbelievable, really. But yeah, it was the old wooden stands, but it had a good atmosphere. You know, you get a few thousand people in there, great atmosphere. But you know, when there was all singing and chanting, it was fantastic, and it didn't half sort of boost the lads on.
Yeah.
You know, they were like the 12th man, and always good support. Always.
You played in some interesting games at Bolton. There was some really sort of well remembered ones. But do you remember going and playing at Old Trafford in the FA Cup?
Yeah.
I just I can remember is the queues. We still got pictures of them now. But the people were queuing down the road for tickets for that game. It was such a big occasion for Bolton.
Yeah, it was sort of part of the recovery as well. It was like things were going well, and getting a good draw against Man United was like another good news story. But because obviously Bolton's so close to Manchester United, it was like a big derby, and everybody wanted in on it. And again, what a good day and what a great occasion.
Running close as well. It wasn't a walk in the park for them at all.
That's right. I just remember sort of we lost it because Mark Hughes sort of shinned one bottom right, bottom left corner as you look at it, and they didn't really create much on the day, but again, that just one bit of opportunity they score and we go out. But yeah, again, what an atmosphere there with all the Bolton fans behind one of the goals and the rest of Old Trafford full. It was it was booming, and again, something that you never forget.
Yeah. You worked, obviously, right the way through Phil Neal's tenure at Bolton. And I think at the time, he got quite a rough ride at Bolton from the supporters. And history maybe judges him slightly differently. I think people look at the team he built and look at the fact that the club kind of edged its way towards what would be their next era under Bruce Rioch. What was he like to work with as a person? Because obviously, you know, he'd been there and done it. He'd got the T-shirt as far as European medals, league titles with Liverpool, etc. Was he difficult to please from that point of view? Did he have high standards that he struggled to kind of get people up to at Bolton?
He did have high standards, but again, that was good. You can't rest on your laurels, you know. And if you think your job's done, you're not going to succeed, because your job's never done in football. But the one thing about Phil Neal was I think he played quite a few times for Bolton.
Yeah.
When I came there, he's probably just phased out his playing career. But he trained with us, and wow, what a player. You know, very I know he played for England a lot of times, but you could see his quality, and I think a lot of people underrated him as a player.
Mm.
But he led by example in training sessions. So therefore, he was setting the standard himself in the training sessions, and then you knew what to expect when going out on the pitch.
Mm.
So for me, and having that opportunity to play with someone that's played at the highest level, you know, along with a lot of other players, Peter Barnes, Sammy Lee, you know, I could probably rattle off quite a few more if I could think about it. But I was very fortunate to play with them players that have played at a high level.
Yeah, absolutely. There were. I mean, Bolton was still a big attraction, even at that point in time, to bring in players at the end of their careers, albeit, but you still have that sort of quality about them, I suppose.
Yep. And again, I was a young lad, 21, 22, 23. So playing with them players, I was looking at them, learning from them, watching how they was acting in public, in private. And yeah, I learned a lot of good things off them older pros.
What was it like then when obviously Neil's time ended? He finished with Bolton. They brought in Bruce Rioch, a very different character. Did you feel like you were part of the old guard? Because obviously you've been through that once at Bolton and the older players went. Did you feel like you had a future with Bruce Rioch?
It's quite a strange story, really, because I was in plaster from breaking my ankle, like I mentioned earlier.
Mm.
And Phil Neil left and Bruce Rioch took over. And within a week, Bruce Rioch had me in the office and said that I would never play for Bolton again. And
right.
I thought to myself, wow, I'm in plaster now. And you've never seen me play unless he's watched videos, but never doesn't know me as a character. But he obviously thought he didn't want me around the football club.
Mm.
And again, that was sort of like a red rag to a bull for me, because I thought to myself, there's one thing I'm going to do. I'm going to play for this football club again,
yeah,
whether
yeah.
you like it or not. You know what I mean? So I got myself fit. I got myself motivated, and I did play quite a few more games before then thinking, yeah, I am part of the old guard here. I've proved my point. It was obvious he was bringing players in, and it was probably my time was up at the football club.
Yeah.
But to tell me that I was never going to play for the football club I loved was really hurtful.
Mm.
And I'd like to say I shoved it right up him.
It's really interesting because, I mean, history paints people's different ways, because Bruce Rioch, obviously the Bolton team at that point in time went on to great success. And so,
oh yeah, you can't knock the fella.
No.
He came in, he was a disciplinarian, him and Colin Todd. Again, if they didn't like me, they didn't like me. That's fine. And they wanted to move on, bring better players in. That's football.
Mm.
And I totally admire them because they took Bolton to a better place, didn't they?
No, absolutely. But it's the little stories that happen, and it's not always. And I'd also like to say that at the start of Bruce Rioch's time, even the Bolton fans didn't like what they were seeing, because the team was struggling. I think until they brought McGinley and David Lee in, obviously David would have been one of the direct competitors for you. But
yeah.
Until that point in time, the team was not clicking at all. And, you know, were it not for a few results or a few goals, things could have worked out very differently.
Yeah, that's football though, isn't it?
It's a weird game. It's a weird game. But you moved on to Exeter City. And
yeah.
That, well, I think they got 25. They paid 25,000 for you. They got 25,000 for you. You had a lot more football in the tank. Obviously, you played more than 100 games at Exeter, and then went on to Brighton, where you're still a bit of a legend, really, aren't you?
Yeah, it's if I ever want my ego stroked, which isn't very often, I'll pop down to Brighton.
Was it last goal at Goldstone and all that?
Yeah, obviously, if we didn't win the game, we were down and in the National League. So
good grief.
It was, it was a very tough period in time, very stressed and pressurised. But we managed to to sneak out of it. I think we were something like 13 points adrift at Christmas.
My word.
And looking dead, buried and doomed. So again, that, like I said earlier, the momentum we gathered was just enough and the timing was just right to do it at the right time. And yeah, the last goal at the Goldstone. And it's yeah, that's part of me now. And wherever I go, if Brighton fans see me, whether I'm in America, Dubai, wherever, that they'll come up and, "Oh, Stuart, do you remember that goal?" And
yeah,
I can't get away from that one. Not that one.
Not that you'd want to. No, I think I'd be wearing that like a badge of honour. I mean, especially when you look at, you know, the other night, you know, beating Newcastle 3-0. They are, you know, riding the crest of a wave in the Premier League. To remember Brighton, as I do remember Brighton, being a struggling club who could barely get a home together. It's such an incredible journey for them.
Yeah, well, I'm taking all credit for where they are now because I started out.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But, I mean, you clearly can't leave football alone, though, it's fair to say, because, I mean, I'm sitting here talking to you. You've had to nip back into your club, Bedworth United, rather, to have a chat on the podcast. I gather you're basically chief cook and bottle washer at the moment. How's life? How's life there? How's life coaching nowadays?
Yeah, it's I love the football club. I love the running the day to day of it. I've got a good lot of staff behind me, a good board. I've got good people around me. It's a nice football club. We've got 35 different teams playing here, as in Bedworth United teams. And it's a real lovely community spirited football club, and again, we're developing it quite quickly. I just don't like Saturday afternoons between 3 and 5 because I can't really have much influence on the lads. It's a bit of sort of cross your fingers and hope it all goes well. Yeah. I'm not in control. I can't kick anyone anymore. Well, I could try, but I'd get sent off.
you don't want to do that, Stuart.
It's a good standard, kicking people as a manager, is it?
No, I dare say it happens, but no. I mean, did you work? I've done a bit of research, as regular listeners will know. I have my moments, but worked as a PE teacher as well.
Well, yeah, I'm like fully qualified coach, fully qualified teacher of sport, and we run the academies, set up our own academies at the football ground here, and we run the academies from here. So we an education, full education program, along with developing footballers here at the football club, which, you know, we've had a few that have gone on to play lower league football, professional football, which is a feather in our cap. And yeah, we're hoping one of these days we get one that maybe makes it up, maybe plays championship or maybe premiership as well.
Well, a final question for you, Stuart, and it's one I'm going to ask of all the people on this series of Buff Extra. And it's, you've got a time machine and you can transport yourself back to one game playing for Bolton Wanderers, play it again. Which one would it be?
Oh, wow. Wow, that's a really good question. I'm guessing it'd probably be the Man United match.
Yeah. At Old Trafford.
Yeah, at Old Trafford. The excitement of it all, the sort of support we got, the atmosphere, everything about it was good. Even the belief going into the second half, thinking we could win it. And then the disappointment, obviously. But, you know, you can't take that experience away from me now. It's there, you know, and it'll live long in the memory. And again, I moved house this week. And I managed to find the United programme, and I was just flicking through it. And it brought back some very, very fond memories. And I guess as I get a bit older, there'll be I'll be up in the loft a bit more looking at memories and taking myself back to the Bolton days and the rest of my career.
That's why we have these podcasts, mate. It's the new book of libraries and programs and such like. I've got a garage full of the things, but I tend to live vicariously through podcasts nowadays. But yeah. if you do manage to go back to United, can you get somebody to kick Mark Hughes in the shin, and perhaps that goal will never go in? Thanks very much for joining us, though, Stuart.
Okay, no problems.